It is a great pleasure to welcome to Best Ideas 2022, Jeff Auchscher, President of Auchscher Asset Management. Jeff began lessons in finance early at age 11, mowing the lawn of Robert Pamplin Sr., the former longtime CEO of Georgia Pacific and recipient of the World's Top CEO Award. Mr. Pamplin tutored Jeff on living a life of ethics. As Jeff puts it, Mr. Pamplin always put his shareholders first and believed business should be transparent. He said the language of business is accounting, and if you can't speak the language, you can't make money. In 1981, Jeff graduated with honors from the University of Oregon with a degree in finance and an emphasis on accounting. Immediately, Jeff began calling on or personally meeting with some of his investment heroes long before they became today's financial rock stars, names like Warren Buffett. Not yet known as the Oracle of Omaha, Mr. Buffett graciously took several of Jeff's calls and offered advice, most notably, number one, don't lose your principal, and number two, never violate the first rule. To this day, the cornerstone of the Auchscher Focus Fund is respect for the power of compounding. What a wonderful path and story, Jeff, and what a wonderful philosophy that underpins that and that has helped your firm be so successful for such a long period of time. It's always a pleasure to have you with us, and I'm truly grateful that you're taking the time to be here again today. So with that, Jeff, I'd like to turn it to you for your remarks, please.
Well, thanks. Thanks. I really appreciate having the opportunity. I mean, you have a great, great service. Today I was just, you know, the company we're going to talk about is American International Group, AIG. And again, this is one of the largest insurance companies in the world. And it's had a problem past, as many of you know. It was deemed too big to fail back in 08 and had to be bailed out by the government. And it's been about a 10-year turnaround. And so we've watched, in fact, going back to 1999, AIG had a it was trading, believe it or not, at 4x revenues, 33x earnings, and it was a darling back in the late 90s, and trading, you know, well over 1.8x book. So what's attractive now is they've finally brought in really good operators, starting with their CEO, Duperall in 2017, who came from, who had a Marsh McLennan background and ACE. And then recently, Peter Zaffino, he was CEO of Marsh McLennan. We followed both. We've been a shareholder of Marsh McLennan for many, many years, and we like the insurance brokerage space. What's intriguing about AIG today is you finally cleaned up this mess of poor underwriting and lack of discipline. So it's one of these companies right now trading under book value. And they've really, most importantly, Peter's really focusing on the combined ratio and the underlying underwriting discipline. And they're companies taking $1 billion out of costs this year, and they're planning on buying about 10% of their market cap. They've aggressively reduced debt. They're targeting a combined ratio of maybe 90 this next year. And, you know, again, stocks run a little bit. We're more aggressive, you know, on a pullback. But earnings are looking at 475 for 2021, but 540 this next year. But most importantly, this is the best team I've seen in 10 years, I think, for the company. And we have a real strong pricing market in insurance, probably the strongest since 2003. So you've got a combination of real strong fundamentals. They're growing both top and bottom line. But again, more importantly, they've brought new discipline, they've got a much more disciplined approach, and they've, in terms of the investment side and the underwriting side. And so it's been a very unpredictable company the last 10 years. But I think as they bring predictability back into the business, the valuation, like I say, if you look from 99 through 2005, this company traded well in excess of 1.5 times book. Right now it's been running, 7 to 9 times book. So it's one of these, and then they're actually spinning off their life and retirement division. They've sold 9.9% to Blackstone, and they are going to do an IPO this coming year. So again, we'd be more aggressive on weakness, but this company is really executing about the best I've seen in 10 years. So we like the execution. We like the fact that they're buying stock under book value, which is a rarity in today's world. And also the value of the float should be enhanced with higher interest rates. Zero rates have just killed the financial sector globally, and it's also reduced the value of insurance float. So we're seeing higher rates. Hopefully we see higher rates, revaluation of these companies, because their investment portfolio will be allowed to enjoy higher yields, and then a re-rating. So we're looking kind of at a re-rating of the financial sector globally, as hopefully the zero rate policies are adjusted. So I don't know if you have any questions, or I can continue.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, Jeff. Maybe a question around capital allocation, if you could elaborate a little bit more on that going forward, and whether there's anything you might prioritize differently than the management is doing.
Well, they brought in, they did make an acquisition on the reinsurance side. So they're they're trying to reduce the volatility in that side of the business. And then, like I say, that they're concentrated on buybacks and debt reduction and returning more cash flow to shareholders. So much more disciplined. Their investment portfolio in the past was heavily laden with aggressive hedge funds that were not really performing. So they're getting much more predictability on the investment side. But I think the big thing is the execution on underwriting, and that discipline, combined with, growing global economies, and then that just focus on keeping the combined ratio. Like I say, they're taking $1 billion out of cost. They're reducing debt. They're they're buying stock under book. And so those are, are really kind of proven value drivers currently.
And Jeff, what is really their crown jewel business right now? What's kind of the business that's most well positioned against the competition?
Well, again, I think Peter Savino's, his background again with Marsh and in the property and casualty side, and although the retirement plans has a higher ROE, it's 12 to 14%, but they're going to split that off or spin that off and go public. They'll retain 50% of that business, but that'll allow both companies to be more focused on their. So that's part of the deal, is just getting this more focused, more transparent, and that so, but I think DeFino's group and his underwriters really will make it a leader in that property casualty, just the commercial underwriting and what have you. Well, that's really their competitive advantage. But I think spinning off, we always like when companies, split up or spin off or refocus. And you kind of have not necessarily a conglomerate discount, like Berkshire is somewhat of a conglomerate discount, but we always like it when companies are refocused. And but I think this, like I say, this underwriting team is about the best I've seen in 10 years.
In terms of the global footprint right now, could you talk a little bit about that? To what extent they have retrenched over the past decade and where you see that going in the future?
And that was, originally Hank Greenberg was the one building this global footprint. They're in 130 countries. And actually, the pricing fundamentals have actually, the pricing has been better internationally. So, they were big early movers in China, 30, 40 years ago. And so that exposure to Asia, it's very difficult to build that from scratch. And so that, like I say, as the global economies continue to recover, it's kind of a play on global GDP. But right now the pricing has really been strong, double digit globally. And now some, different areas, this year's 2021 actually was the second worst year for catastrophes with Ida and some of the flooding and what have you. So I think Ida was, I think 2017 was maybe a little bit more, but that actually enhances the pricing for the entire industry. Excuse me, I think. And we'll extend it. So, the irony in insurance is, right now the catastrophe losses are running 30% higher than the average of the last 5 years. And so what it's led to is, as people realize that their homes or what have you are underinsured, you're seeing more insurance purchased, higher prices, kind of double digit in a real, like I say, a strong pricing environment globally, strongest since 2003. So these insurance companies cycle from soft to hard markets. And so right now it coming into 2022, it's, strong execution, strong pricing, some catalyst in not rock bottom valuation, but it's hard to find a company that is executing better than this management team in the industry today.
How does their valuation compare to some of their closest comparables? Are there other major companies trading below book value, or is this quite unique?
Yeah, it depends on, like, we have Aon and Marsh, and those are kind of early high return businesses that have much different value parameters, much higher valuations. And Progressive would be in the same. Progressive is probably the best run. Progressive and Geico in that, auto insurance. So those will have much higher valuations. And you've got things like Allstate and companies like Allstate and Travelers. And Travelers has been very well run over the years. And so these will typically trade, 120, 150 a book, and they have, higher ROEs. It's been a lower valuation industry, but what's hurt AIG is very low returns on invested capital, and kind of, our bet is they're going to, over time, they'll catch up. And the ROEs will be much higher. So each industry, there's the auto insurance side, and then there's you know, you've got just different segments of insurance and the P&C side, then you've got Berkshire Hathaway, which, you know, is probably the best run. But like I say, this has been kind of the laggard in the industry, which is finally, it's executing top tier, but the valuation isn't top tier. So it's one of those revaluation plays as to catch up. But, you know, like I say, from 99 through 2006 or seven, this company was trading typically 150, 190, 190% of book. And recently it's been, you know, 80 to 90% of book. So not a huge home run, but, you know, if they can continue to grow earnings, you know, we like the double play. I mean, you start, you know, at 10 to 11 times. And, you know, like last year, I think I recommended CVS and I think it was 8 times earnings. And now CVS has gone to, you know, 12 times. Well, that's 50%. You know, the stock's gone from, I think, what, 60 to 105. But we like kind of the dull, mundane, slow, but great execution and then added predictability and then higher. So if you look at the real high end, like the Aons and the Marsh, we have Aon actually, it goes all the way back under $3 a share, you know, and it's been recently 290 to 300, but those are the best models, Marsh, but the leadership of AIG now has come out of Marsh. And now again, that's a better model, the brokerage model. And this isn't the best business model. This just happens to be in an environment where interest rates are coming off, you know, according to Jim Grant, you know, your interest rate levels are at 4,000 to 5,000 year lows. So as we normalize rates and you're a company that's under book with aggressive buybacks under book and then executing with disciplined underwriting, that taking the combined ratio, it was 107 last year, down to 99, down to 90. So you've got, they're taking cost out of the business. So this isn't really, this is more of a turn that's finally bearing the fruit of, you know, 3 to 4 years of really tough changes. And so finally it's getting re-rated. And I think that together with a tailwind of re-rating of all the financials with a more normalized higher rate environment. Like I say, the zero interest rate environment has killed, you know, the banking industry globally, the, you know, insurance. And you can see kind of like Aflac, you know, Aflac's been trading under 10 times earnings. In the late 90s, it was, you know, over 20, consistently over 20 times earnings. So we think there could be a re-rating of these insurance companies as we normalize the rates.
Do we have a sense or has the company talked about what impact, let's say, 100 basis point move in interest rates would have on profitability?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, again, because, you know, these companies typically about half their earnings come from the investment portfolio. So, you know, with zero rates, it's just been extremely painful. A lot of these companies have been forced to do, you know, to take more risk. They've de-risked their investment portfolio a couple of years ago. So, but in general, it's just like anything, you know, you look at cash balances, any company that generates, you know, a lot of free cash benefits from higher rates. And so I haven't seen the exact, and you know, that it's hard. What we found is just if we can find great operators that, and then businesses that generate high free cash flow yields, they'll, you know, they'll benefit versus, you know, companies that just eat capital, but, you know, they will definitely, I think across the board, just given when you have such a large part of your earnings coming from investment cash flow, if we can get some more normalized rates. I mean, the average since 1965, you know, the average 3-month T-bill has been like over 5%, you know, we're what, 0.2 on the, so, any re-rating. And the last time inflation was this high, I remember back when I started in the business, we were buying 15% 10-year governments. Right now, we're 1.7 or 8. So if we re-rate, whereas a reversion to the mean, if we revert to the mean on something like this, it's positive. If you're in companies that are 10, 20, 30 times sales, that they will compress. So we're seeing our low PE, low price to cash flow companies really, they really do well. In fact, during the high inflation period, I was actually investing at that time. And so it was really important to look at that mandatory CapEx model, because, back then utilities just got killed because building out nuclear power plants and they didn't have any free cash and they had to borrow and they, so these models right now, it's just, they've got a lot of free cash and definitely I think will benefit. I haven't quantified again that change, but I think a reversion to the mean will help all these high free cash flow businesses.
The $1 billion in cost cutting, where is that mainly coming from?
They've instigated this, just kind of going through the entire company in trying to drive that combined down to under 90. That's kind of their target. So they've put in place, this kind of a program just to really focus on excellence in overall performance. So it's kind of a crusade they're on to look at every cost and, just look at any kind of waste and, company-wide, the leadership is just, kind of like Jim Sinegal of Costco, and retail is detail. Peter Safino, they've just really looked at everything to drive down, to increase efficiency and, like I say, drive down cost across the board.
Jeff, when you think about a company like AIG for the portfolio, I'm wondering how you look at alternatives. Would Berkshire Hathaway be an alternative to this? I assume you own both. But how do you think about, the relative attractiveness, let's say?
Yeah, no, we have Berkshire all the way back since the 80s. So, and we love Berkshire. It's just Berkshire is, they're fixed. they're a great company. This one has been broken. And, you can do real well going from horrible to bad, in investing. A lot of times you can just, but what we found is, this one's priced, although Berkshire is pretty cheap too, but this one is priced for mediocrity, but it's not reflecting the new execution. So you can have a great company in a mediocre stock, and this has been it's had a mediocre 10 years, but now the current management team is, I think it's mispriced for the current management team. The direction is up in the leverage in a Berkshire. Like I say, it's, extremely well. This one is kind of refocusing into two companies. So we don't really like the conglomerate models, like if you look at where, for instance, GE, back is, since 99, it was 36 times earnings and it's, down 50% since 99. So it's a little different, like we look at all these and like I say, AIG, we're, our basis is quite a bit lower, but what we found is if a company can execute, you know, over time, and I go back to the Costco, we have some Costco and client accounts, it's under a dollar, you know. And so the mistake on Costco over the years, you know, they executed, well, the mistake was selling it based solely on valuation, you know. But what we're looking for is hidden execution. Like these companies are, you know, companies that are really executing, but they're not priced, especially in a market that looks a lot like 1999 to me, you know, living through that. And so it's been my experience. If companies can execute and the valuation isn't extreme, and then you've got the tailwind of buying under book. But Berkshire, you know, we look across, we have, like I said, we've got the Aons and the Marshes and those are first to move, you know, like they've done really well, the brokers have, but you know, they're priced to reflect that. And so, but we do have, you know, we have positions all over the industry. This one just happens to the last year has really been outperforming. And yet it's, like I say, it's got a bad taste in everyone's mouth. And so a lot of times these, so like companies emerging from like Chesapeake, who's emerged out of bankruptcy. That's another example where, you know, they're executing, but people have all they remember is the bad times.
Jeff, if I can ask a little bit more broadly, what I'd be curious about your thoughts on inflation and protecting the portfolio from inflation. You mentioned the financial sector could do well as interest rates go higher. Are you investing in other sectors as well that you feel would offer good protection?
Yeah, well, it was kind of funny, John. When I first got in the business, you know, inflation was running 12. And so first thing I did is I went back 100 years to see, you know, what did well. And again, it was companies, it was, you know, things like drugstore chains, supermarkets, tobacco, companies that had high inventory turns, low CapEx, you know, and were able to pass through. You want the, ideally, you know, you want that business model like See's Candy, you know, like a little bit of pricing each year over time with nominal mandatory CapEx, you know. So, you know, like we talked about in the 80s, you remember in the Northwest, they built 9 nuclear power plants and they were called, you know, Washington Public Power Supply. And so, but the problem is inflation was running 12%. They cost overruns, and yet they all came out AAA rated. These are municipal bonds, and 8 of the 9 went bankrupt, you know, because the CapEx, you know. So you want companies during inflation with nominal mandatory CapEx, but have that pricing. You know, I met with the CEO of Sherwin-Williams, you know, like, you know, if you're spending $45, $50 an hour on painting your house, you're not going to go for lousy paint, right? So what's made Sherwin-Williams great over the years, have a little bit of pricing each year, you know, like See's Candy, a little bit of pricing. The stock goes from like 28 million to, I think Buffett's pulled over $1.5 billion out of that. So over the years. So, and that's what people don't realize. Also with inflation, you typically is 20 less inflation rate. So if your inflation is 12, your PE is 8. So you look back in 1979, sure enough, you know, the market was 8 or 9 times earnings. So today, a lot of people have not invested during inflation. And we have a 7% inflation print by tomorrow. So granted, that probably won't stay there. But if you have 4% inflation, that's a 16 multiple. So all the half the market, you know, is could compress dramatically. Not unlike the Nifty 50 in the, you know, early 70s, you know, it was like 50 one decision stocks traded up to 80 times earnings. Inflation comes up. That whole 50 compressed to under 10 times earnings, you know. So that's why the last 10 years it's been, you know, growth at any price, because when your rates are zero, but all of a sudden if these rates, and it looks to me like the Fed's behind the curve, You know, once that inflation gets embedded, you know, back in the 70s, I mean, you had the Fed chief back then, inflation was picking up, oil tripled, and they said, don't worry, we'll take care of it. And then, you know, they took out Arthur Burns. He said, well, they took oil out of the index, and then food tripled, and then, and then they took that out of the index. And so the problem is once inflation gets embedded, it gets hard unless you, you know, back when Volcker just, you know, had to really raise rates to 20 to kill it. So if we have higher inflation, where price value hasn't really mattered the last 10 years, it's been just like top line revenue focus. So now the market's refocusing if inflation again does stay. But again, with all of the focus, you know, with all of the, you know, this whole trend toward decarbonization, you know, that is, and they're just, you know, the energy sector is just, you know, politically, they can't get money hardly. So that, you know, anytime you have socialism or government intervention, you have higher inflation. So, and people don't realize when you have higher inflation, your price and your value, they matter. Back in the 70s, it was just, you had to buy right, because from 1964 to 81, I mean, as inflation picked up, you know, the Dow went up 1 point from that period. And that's what people don't realize, that you'll have periods in the market, you know, from 1900 to 1920. I mean, the market went up, I think, less than 10% over 20 years. So, you know, you really have to know what you want to own ahead of time, and you have to price it. Well, that price value has actually hurt us, because the discipline in an undisciplined Fed environment, you know, but that's why if inflation, you know, is stays up, and we think it will because of the politics of the energy politics will, and then, you know, again, labor, and then housing, you know, housing is a big chunk of, and housing rents and what have you, we see that. So if we take a valuation in the market 20 less, say inflation's 3 or 4, I mean, at multiple of, you know, 16, 17 times. So that's what happened in 99. I mean, all those high PE stocks compressed. I was going back then, you know, you had AOL and you remember AOL and Yahoo together, they were almost $300 billion, and then they recently, this last year, were sold for $5 billion, you know. And going back, like we was talking about, AIG was 33 times, 4 times revenues. Bristol Myers was 40 times back then. Cisco, 128, you know, Coke, 42, GE, 36. So Intel was 32. So a lot of these companies for the next 10 years, you know, they didn't go anywhere. And I think that's what the real risk right now is, a revaluation. That's why we like, kind of like the AIGs. If you get, at least you're under book, you're low multiple, a lot of free cash, as you revert back. We just don't like, you know, the torpedo stocks, high expectation, high valuation, and you compress with higher inflation. And, you know, Microsoft was 70 times earnings in 99, and from 99 to 2009, it dropped 50%, you know. So, that's where we see, it was kind of interesting. You know, Pfizer finally got back to the 99 level. It hit 92 times when Viagra, you know, they hit Viagra stock shot to 92 times. And it finally hit 50 this last year, finally, after, you know, it hit the 99 high after, you know, almost 22 years.
And Jeff, I know that you are also active in farming. I'm wondering whether you have any interesting anecdotes or anything you're seeing there that could be of interest to the rest of us.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we've got farms and ranches, and I, since the 80s, you know. No, it's very interesting. Like, you know, things like Roundup, which we try not to use, but, you know, that's produced out of China. And so you've got all the fertilizers, potash, and, you know, the natural gas derivatives, you know, for fertilizer. And you, as you know, I mean, the UK went, you know, Europe has rapidly decarbonize. You know, they've gone to wind, and then wind in the North Sea, stopped for a while there, and so you had this quadrupling of natural gas. Well, that shut down a lot of the fertilizer production, which the carbonation for soda comes from the fertilizer plants. So there's a ripple effect, but again, the farming, it's amazing how, no one is in that space. And it's a great space. It's a tough business. But I think we like areas that are starved for capital. I mean, I love farming and ranching. It's just, you really have to realize you get one turn a year, and it's a bad business. Your costs are going up. It's not like Costco where you turn inventories 15 to 20 times, so it's not a great business model. It's a great lifestyle. And, but you learn a lot about businesses and, transportation. We've learned years ago, this whole model of delivery. I mean, there's no way farming and ranching, we can't hardly deliver 10 miles and make a profit. So you have all these delivery models. I was on the board with Benchmark, of a company called eBags, and it was like, we saw firsthand free shipping, but people would order 10 bags, return 8, and you had to eat the shipping and eat the return. So this whole transportation model, what I've learned from farming and ranching is like, wow, you don't want to be shipping your product. And that's kind of a lot of these VC models are based on, grocery delivery and everything. But, I'm here to tell you, it's very tough, the transportation aspect. So, but I would highly recommend life on the farm, though. It's great.
Well, thank you. On that note, I think we will adjourn for this session. Jeff, it's been a real pleasure to learn from you again. Thank you for your thesis on AIG and also for entertaining all my questions. I truly appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you, John. Thanks for everything.
Best wishes, Jeff. Take care for now.
Thank you.